This episode is brought to you by Element, spelled L-M-N-T. What is Element? It's a delicious, sugar-free electrolyte drink mix. I tried this recently after hearing about it on another podcast, and since then, I've stocked up on boxes and boxes of this and usually use it 1 to 2 times per day. Element is a great alternative to other commercial recovery and performance drinks. As a coach or an athlete, you will not find a better product that focuses on the essential electrolytes your body needs during competition. Element has become a staple in my own training and something we are excited to offer our coaches and student athletes as well. Element is used by military special forces teams, Team USA weightlifting, at least 5 NFL teams, and more than half the NBA. You can try it risk-free. If you don't like it, Element will give you your money back, no questions asked. They have extremely low return rates. Element came up with a very special offer for you as a listener to this podcast. For a limited time, you can claim a free Element sample pack. You only cover the cost of shipping. For U.S. customers, this means that you can receive an 8-count sample pack for only $5. Simply go to drinkelement.com/Justin Climo. That's drinkelement.com/Justin Climo to claim your free 8-count sample pack. drinkelement.com/Justin Climo.
The Context Podcast is proudly sponsored by Delta Wines and Brick and Mortar, our everyday go-to with sustainability built in. Delta Wines are vibrant yet balanced, made to be enjoyed on special occasions. Brick and Mortar was founded in 2011 and has worked to create the European wine drinker's California wine. The wines are small lot, single vineyard sourced from Napa, Sonoma County, and Mendocino Ridge. In addition to tasting good, they also help you feel good with an eco-friendly packaging and environmental nonprofit donations with every purchase. Buy online at winesforchange.com. Also, use the code CONTACTS to support us and get a discount. The presentation is beautiful, the wines are great, and you'll be supporting saving the earth. What more do you need? Again, that's online at winesforchange.com. Discount code CONTACTS at checkout.
Hello, and welcome to CONTACTS, a podcast dedicated to bringing you practical ideas from coaches sharing what they have learned throughout their career. I want to open the door into my network of contacts whose innovative, reflective, and diverse coaching knowledge may offer ideas to enhance your experience. I'm your host, Justin Climo. Welcome back to Contacts. We are here today with Rosanna McCormick, head field hockey coach, Monterey High School, where she has been holding it down since 2006. Coach, thanks for coming on today.
Thank you for having me. This is awesome.
Let's dive in. Take us through your background as a coach. How did you end up doing this? The journey is always unique for everyone, and I would love to hear your story.
Sure. So I went to Monterey High School, played field hockey there under the legendary Joan Wathauer, went away to school, and just always kept in contact with my coach. She was a very instrumental person in my life and still is, even after a few years of her being gone. But she was just always in my ear. So I'd always come back and visit, check in during hockey season, watch games, and she strongly encouraged that I look into officiating because there's always a need for officials that know the sport. And field hockey is one of those sports where unless you have some sort of international exposure because you're not American and you played another sport as a girl other than softball or volleyball, or you played it. And a lot of the officials that were there just didn't have the experience. They were soccer coaches or whatnot. So it was really nice to come back and be able to officiate games, which it reminds you of the love and passion you have for a sport. It's really hard because all you want to do is play and get in there. But it was a really eye-opening experience to learn more of the X's and O's and being on that side as an official from being a player. I mean, you have a totally different perspective. And all of a sudden you have more compassion for officials and how hard it is to call a game correctly. I did that for a few years and I was at UCSC. So I would come back and referee games in Monterey. I drive over the hill and referee games up in San Jose. And so, you know, after a couple of years of doing that, and the game had changed so much since the time I played in the 90s to shortly after that in early 2000s, the game has really changed. So it was an education for sure. And then still keeping in contact with teachers and coaches at Monterey High, one of my orchestra teachers, I ran into her and Mrs. Ceramelli, and she said, hey, Mrs. Wathauer is getting up there in age. She could really use some help. And we know how much this program means to you and you should check in. And so I did, you know, I asked her if there was anything I could do, a volunteer status kind of thing. And before I knew it, I was signing paperwork, meeting with Mr. Asaki, our legendary AD, and reminiscing on the good old days when I was a student at Monterey. And before you knew it, I was coaching side by side with one of the most influential people in my life. That's kind of how it went down. And Mrs. Wathauer was very generous with her program. That was her program since the 70s. And so to be able to come in and pretty much have my freedom with what I wanted to do with the girls and see in the sport, I just thought was really generous. And of course, there were certain things we did her way, especially like running offense and more of the tactical things of the game. And I tried to like, hey, why don't we try this? I saw someone up at Stanford do this. And she gave me a lot of like freedom with JV to experiment. And when you come in as a new coach, even a JV coach, those varsity girls give you a hard time if they're not necessarily very welcoming or accepting. So they still very much listen to just what Mrs. Wathauer had to say. And I was a little bit younger then and could still outrun most of them, but they didn't really embrace me the way I had anticipated. So my focus was the JV girls, and I was really able to develop some expectations and skills that the JV girls needed. And then I think eventually the varsity girls were like, why are they doing that? Why don't we? And so coaching girls is a little funky. There's a lot of buy-in that they have to trust you. And there's still some like weird sizing up. I mean, I'm a lot older than them, but I think like I had to prove myself to them in this weird, like mean girls kind of way. So I did not anticipate that coming in. Then I got my credential, was hired on to teach English at Monterey High School. That was always my plan, was to be an English teacher. I just took some detours along the way and been at Monterey High ever since. And when Mrs. Wathauer passed away, the program became 100% exclusively mine. There have been years where I've been the only coach with anywhere between 60 to 70 girls. There have been years where I've had amazing alumni come back and help me out. I think every year I have girls that come back and help before they go back to college. But there are a few that stick around and they want to do more than just volunteer for a couple hours. They want to be there every day. They want to be there at games. So that's been helpful. But for, I don't know, I would say the first 7 to 10 years of my coaching, it's been exclusively me, because Mrs. Wathauer was in her 80s. And so she was coaching from a chair on the sidelines. And as she got older and her health declined, she was there, but not in the capacity of running everything the way she used to.
Fascinating backstory for a couple of reasons. One, the journey was a little non-traditional, right? Started as an official and then got roped into coaching at your alma mater, which is always special to go back to. And from there, figuring out how the game is changing. And you mentioned something that most people around here for sure aren't really aware of, that field hockey internationally is predominantly a men's game. And domestically, it is predominantly, if not completely, a women's sport. Figuring out how to have access to resources in the sport that you want to play and or coach when it is also predominantly an East Coast thing, yeah, is definitely challenging. So kudos to you for figuring that piece out. I also want to dig in a little bit to the fact that you got 60 plus girls out there by yourself, keeping them engaged, which is often very different than a traditional sport where you're able to find a few assistants here and there. And so you're dealing with circumstances that are beyond your control because there's just not people around that you can rope into helping out. And that's a challenge that you've had to face. So it makes me wonder, as you were able to apprentice for Coach Wathauer, what did you realize once you became in charge and you moved over in the proverbial seat 18 inches that you still needed to figure out and that you had no idea what you were doing?
Wow, so much. I think the main thing was recruiting kids to play, and not just to play, but to stay. One of the things I love about Monterey High is the opportunity to play athletics for girls. And in the fall season alone, we have cross country, we have volleyball, we have water polo and cheerleading, right? We have that big pool too. And our female athletes have so many choices to make. Mm-hmm. So I had to figure out a way, not just to attract kids, but to keep them in my program, because we have a lot of tourists. One year they'll do field hockey, then they'll go and they'll try cheer, and then, oh, let's try water polo senior year. And that's great for that student. But when you're trying to build a program and you're trying to get some W's and some flags in the gym, you can't have your tourist athlete. You need to develop kids. And so that was one of the hardest things that I really had to focus on. And I think that is exactly how I ended up coaching soccer, a sport I had never played, for 5 years. I think it was at the end of my first season coaching with Mrs. Walthour, Mr. Saki came and said, hey, we're looking for a girls varsity and JV soccer coach. And we're having a hard time. And do you and Mrs. Walthour want to try this just to keep the program going? And when I looked at Mrs. Walthour, she answered for me, you know, yes, we will do it. Because she was such an advocate for girls' sports. And she was so instrumental in the Title IX development for California that she knew that if there was not a coach, that program would be cut. Mm-hmm. And so even if it meant that two field hockey coaches were out there coaching up some soccer girls, if that's all we had, that was good enough, because at least it would get us through a season where we could recruit and find a more qualified coach. And we ended up, one of our volleyball coaches, Tu Savatasi, eventually stepped in. And then I stayed as the JV coach for way longer than I probably should have. But I had so much fun coaching soccer. And as a result, so many of those girls jumped to field hockey because I was able to make connections for myself to coach. Mm-hmm. Like, a field positioning is pretty much the same between soccer and hockey, except for that crazy offsides rule. Thankfully, that's gone from field hockey. But there was so much that they could transfer skill-wise and game knowledge. And so what some of the best teams I've had in hockey have been the teams that I coached in soccer, those girls that have carried over, because their soccer sense translated to their sensibilities on the field for hockey. And so that was amazing. Those were my best years. But as I developed more as a teacher, and I've always considered myself a teacher first, and then I'm an athletic coach, because I feel like if I'm putting my sport above my teaching as in the classroom, and the kids know, they know when you have coaches who are more into their sport than the teaching aspect of their day. But if I do that, then those kids are going to do that too. And they're always going to be an athlete before they're a student. Mm-hmm. And that's not what this is about. I started to teach more advanced placement classes. And I remember calling Mr. Asaki and just saying, I can't do soccer anymore, Asaki. I'm so sorry, but I really need to focus on the AP classes that I'm teaching, because I can get through 7 to 9 weeks of hockey, but 18 weeks of sports, that's a big chunk of the school year that I'm not 100% present for my students. So I think just going back to the things I had to learn was just making my program attractive for kids to be a part of. The identity piece of field hockey at Monterey High is so huge. Like, hockey girls, they carry themselves in a very different manner. And I think that's been something I've really tried to develop and empower them so that they know that they're coming to play field hockey, but they're also part of something bigger than just hockey when they play. And so hopefully that attracts them to my program, and hopefully that makes them stick a little bit longer than two seasons.
For sure. No, and that's a great point that you bring up too, that many people don't even think about. And you use the word recruit, which is a turnoff if out of context, but what it means is to recruit your campus. And as a faculty member who is present on the campus, it's a lot easier for you to do that. You're out walking around, you're talking to people, you're seeing your girls with their other friends. Hey, why don't you come out and try this? And the unintentional emotional intelligence and awareness that you had to coach a second sport then reinforces your primary sport, because you're absolutely right. One, the games are similar. Two, if you make a connection, those kids are going to want to play for you and with their friends in the next season. And it's just such a snowball effect. So really informative approach that often goes understated. So thank you for sharing that. The other thing that I'd be curious to know, based on your tenure and how long you've been able to be there as the head coach yourself, but also as an alum returning to a program that you played in, what would you say is the best thing you do in your program that has consistently impacted your culture over the years? It may be tangible, it may not be, but things that are non-negotiables and constants for you and your program.
Yeah, I never went into it intentionally planning some of the things that we do that make our program unique. It's really been out of necessity. So when I'm the only coach with 60 to 70 girls in a 50-yard area on the field, I can't coach them all. And so as a result, I've always leaned on senior leadership in my program. So whether it's small side games where seniors are the leaders of them, if we're doing specific shots on goal and I have a senior captain kind of monitoring what's happening there and giving feedback to kids. We used to do a lot of grouping of a JV player with a varsity player, or you always have kids that are really good at one or two things. Like that's their specialty. That's their thing. In years past, I've had girls that are really good with carrying the ball. So they might end up working with a small group of freshmen to show them how to dribble the ball correctly. Or I might have a kid with a great reverse shot. So small groups, right? So you start to empower your kids on your team and they then become your assistant coaches. And my captains, when I first came to the program, captains were voted on. And so the girls picked the captains. You know how that goes. It's a popularity contest. Who's the prettiest? Who's the most popular at school? Or who's the meanest? Like all of those pecking order girl social structure things played such a big role. And then when I was able to have more of a say of things, I picked my captains the season before the next, because that summertime, I'm working with those captains. We're talking about workouts. We're talking about goals for the team. We're picking out new swag for the uniforms and what new sticks we have money to purchase and things like that. Who do we want to play up in San Jose? Relying on my captains so much that I tell them, you guys are my assistant coaches, because we don't have any, like you are them. So you have so much more of a say in this program than probably any sport on this campus, because I need you. You need to set up the field on game days when I'm still teaching last period of the day. You need to make sure there are balls. You need to make sure the equipment is set up for practice. Like, they are my assistant coaches. For me, I think something that really established the culture in my program is student leadership. And they know that they have a say in what happens. They know they have a say in how practice looks. And sometimes to a fault, right? Like sometimes it gets away from you a little bit and you're like, okay, wait, this isn't a committee. I'm still your coach. Let's narrow this down a little bit. But I think that made such a big difference in those beginning years that when girls came into the program, they just fell in line. They knew what the system was. They know that if I'm coming down the hill at 3:31 and they're not warming up yet, they know it's going to be a tough day. And, you know, it's, I don't know, ruling by fear a little bit, but at the same time, the seniors on the team and the juniors, the returning players all had a purpose. They weren't just the star of the team, or they just weren't the popular girl on the team. They were a leader. And I think that's really made a big difference in my program.
I love that, the idea of distributed leadership when you do not necessarily have the resources to coach in a traditional fashion, and the idea that you are choosing these athletes before the summer, working with them throughout to teach and share leadership because you lean on them so heavily, probably leads to that trickle down community and sustained leadership over time and culture, where you got to fight for your culture every day, but you probably did the heavy lifting in those first few years that has been able to sustain. So as you are coaching at a place like Monterey High, which is pretty tight knit, it's a small community, and your campus isn't the biggest campus in the world. And so you're on top of each other, often practicing for sports. Have you learned anything watching other sports that you've applied to field hockey, other coaches, or heck, even other field hockey coaches? But I'm always curious about what is translatable.
Yeah. In the very beginning, in those early years, I coached with Tom Newton, our principal. We shared the field, and we were also early in our teaching careers together too. So there were just a lot of commonalities. We were going through similar struggles at the same time. And we've just been really good friends. And I respect a lot of what he did with this football program because we shared that field together. And it wasn't like I had 30 yards and he had the rest. It was down the middle. And I'm a stickler about that kind of stuff. When your founding coach is, you know, a primary voice in the development of Title IX, I'm going to fight for my girls. And so sharing that space with him, I think we learned a lot about each other. But then I also got to see a lot of his culture in his program and what he did with his boys. And instead of creating this animosity between two teams sharing a space, we did a lot of things together in the beginning. It was shortly after CCS changed all the conditioning rules and early starts and all of that. And so instead of fighting over the space, Tom just said, why don't we just condition together? And so there were a few early seasons where you'd go out there and you'd see football and hockey girls lined up on the line together, doing whatever conditioning workout was scheduled for that day. And what I appreciated about that so much was his open-mindedness to do something like that. I don't know a lot of football coaches that would do that. And there was a lot of joy, and my hockey girls were kicking butt too, because I run their butt. So they were conditioned and they were good to go. And on the last 2 week period, the girls were like, I quit football, you know, but it was really cool and motivating to see, you know, a lineman trying to keep up with one of my forwards, when the encouragement and the camaraderie that was built between the two programs during that time was pretty cool. As a hockey coach, it's really hard because there's not a professional league in America. There is one in Europe. So with the internet now and social media, there are ways to keep up on the developments of the sport and who's leading in the world in the sport, but there's nothing local. So I've really relied on a lot of our college campuses. Until recently, Stanford had a program. They just recently went through some cutbacks in their program. So hockey was cut, but I've done a lot of collaborations with Shelley Onstead at Berkeley. She'll do a spring camp down here with us every year. I mean, she's just been an amazing resource to have. And Tara and Steve Danielson up at Stanford, like if you email them with a question, I remember I was trying to get some new equipment for my goalie and I emailed them because they at the time had one of the best goalies in the country playing for them. And so I'm like, okay, no budget. What equipment do I need for my goalie? And they were super kind and were able to like tell me where to go and like what pieces to get. I was a forward. I have no idea how to dress a goalie. So I'm like, I don't know. So she's super helpful between Tara and Shelly. It's just been amazing resources. And then Henry Reyes up at Los Gatos. I've never met a coach that has those girls are like machines. You watch them come out on the field, those girls, wow, it's amazing. But you would think he would like shelter and hide all his secrets, and not at all. Like he's so transparent and would invite us to come up and watch his practices in the summer. I had girls play for his indoor league. He wouldn't charge them. He'd let them come because they had to drive all that way. And just the hockey community of coaches, so gracious. Like I've never met such competitive people. Like on the sidelines, totally different story, but before and after the game, off season, they are the most gracious group of people, because I think we're such a small group that we all know the same struggles. And so instead of not sharing the wealth with people, it is a very open community. And of course, Stanley over at North Salinas, he's been one of my all-time biggest collaborators. And even your coach, Christine, and I, we used to coach club together. So it's just a community of like, we want our sport to be better. And so we've really learned to come together to make each other better. And Monterey High is only as good as the teams in the league. Yeah. So if PCAL is struggling, I'm struggling. Right. So we've really leaned on each other to build our own strength in our own programs out of necessity again. So we lean on each other.
Yep. Well, two major takeaways there. One, that figuring out the assets and resources that you have on your own campus that may not be sports specific. So figuring out how to partner with the football coach where you have two sports that don't have opposite gender equivalents, but hey, this is how we can work together and this is what we can learn from one another. And two, being willing to reach out and ask for help from the community of your sport in realizing how giving people are. Often as a young coach, without the security that you may develop as an older coach, we're allergic to reaching out for help. And the more you can do that, the more you realize people are willing to give away trade secrets, because it's athletics is everybody's plagiarizing everyone else anyway. So great points to note as to what you can learn and how you can grow through other people. And it's a great model for your kids to see as well. How would you say in the 14 years you've been the head coach, your approach to coaching has changed?
Looking at your list of questions, that one tripped me up a little bit, because I like to think in the beginning, I was definitely more strict in the beginning. I was a younger coach on campus coming in and I wanted to be taken seriously. I knew that I'd be sharing a field with football, and I didn't want our mission as a sport to ever be, oh, they're just girls in kilts with sticks. Like, they're not a competitive program. And so it was really important for me to come out there and reinvent our program and our perception on campus. And so I was strict. So when I think about some of the rules I had and the conditioning things we would do and just the expectation of how they presented themselves, not just on the field, but also as students in the classroom, I think I was pretty strict. I think some of the girls were a little scared. And so I thought I was demonstrating what it meant to be a strong woman on campus. And there are very few female coaches at Monterey High. And there are very few female teacher coaches at Monterey High. So a lot of that persona then transferred into the classroom. And I think I kind of got labeled as being very strict. But I like to have a good time. And the kids that took the time to get to know me, your captains, the kids you spend a lot of time with, they know what's really up. I think in the beginning, I was really strict. But now looking on the last few years where I've had these amazing alumni come back and help, like they've graduated from college. And they've been able to give a little bit more time and have been able to be a JV coach so I could coach varsity. I think in letting go of some of that pressure to be strict, and the athlete has changed. I know 14 years doesn't seem like a long time, but from 06 to now, the athlete is different. How you could coach kids in 06 compared to 2020, totally different. You know, kids are carrying a lot more stress. Kids have a lot more responsibility. You know, some of them, field hockey always tends to be like the second sport they play. It's not their main sport. So they might be super focused as softball or soccer players, but they don't have that same intensity for your sport. So that's been really, you know, hard to, like, how do you coach a kid who's doing this to stay in shape for soccer or stay in shape for track or whatever the spring sport might be, but have them still take it seriously. So it's been nice having other coaches on the field, because I think they communicate to them too, like, this is important, right? It's pretty strict in the beginning. And I think now have a little bit more perspective and realize we're not winning Olympic medals here. And what's more important to me is that the girls feel good about themselves and the confidence. And so much of sports has little to do with the sport and winning. And it's all about the character and the commitments and what you learn in those really low moments. And so obviously there's still structure and formalities and expectations, but yeah, I don't think I'm as intense as I used to be.
Well, there's nothing wrong with intensity. I think the thematic message that I have heard in the majority of these conversations is I have pivoted as a coach to being focused more on human development than being focused on the scoreboard. And I still want to win. We're still going to compete, but the process is more important than the outcome and actually directly influences the outcome. And I think I wouldn't even say being more relaxed, but the word you used, perspective, comes with age and experience. And how do you offer that up for the next generation, like, as to what's important? On that note, this one's a little bit different, but I am curious, what have you most recently changed your mind on from a coaching standpoint? So you gave the bigger picture, here's how I've adjusted my approach, but something that may be a little more tangible that, hey, I used to think this and I was locked into this camp on this situation and now I'm here.
Yeah, that's a really good question. Like I said, field hockey has changed a ton as a sport. And so I think in the beginning, being a person who played offense and was on the attack most of the time, I think my whole focus was really on developing players to score. It was all about shooting. It was all about trying to score. And I realize now how short-sighted that was, because I've had to learn a lot about the sport. And I don't know, I pride myself in admitting that I know nothing about what I'm doing. And so I've taken a lot of courses with USA Field Hockey, their coaching level one and level two, and also like their officiating courses too, so that I'm still keeping up on how officials are calling things and how coaches are designing programs to be effective, right? And when USA Field Hockey comes in, they're not coaching you from a high school perspective, they're coaching you from an international perspective. And so to see how they approach developing their attack and their defense compared to how I learned or how I've developed in watching local teams play or even college teams play, it really changed the focus from every shot you can take, just take, and really more developing your attack, more similar to the way soccer does. So using your backfield a lot more, having multiple passing options available, not just always looking forward to shoot. Mm-hmm. And so that has helped not just develop my forwards, but also my midfield and my defense, because now they're touching the ball more than they would have before when I was so focused on just coaching, shooting, and attacking. And as a result, I feel like it's improved the skill of all my kids because they're touching the ball more. I think some of the mistakes I've made sometimes is you have a fast kid. You have a kid that no one can catch. Mm-hmm. So every play revolves around that kid. When that kid gets hurt or when that kid is sick, your whole plan is gone because the kids don't know how to adjust because you've never given them the opportunity to in practice or in scrimmage or in any way. And so I no longer build things around a certain kid, because not only does a kid get injured, a kid graduates. Mm-hmm. And so then there's 4 years where that student played for you and 4 years where you took away the development from someone else on your team. So changing that approach of always just being focused on scoring and shooting really helped because it gave the kids are touching the ball more. They're developing their stopping skills. They're developing their passing, their communication. And as a result, that just improves everyone's game and it brings everyone's level up.
Fascinating answer and very engaging in the way in which this is how I grew up playing. This was the focus. And I have now realized that not that it was backwards, but that I was leaving things on the table and I wasn't maximizing what we could do because I had, for lack of a better word, neglected this aspect of the game. Thank you for sharing that. Final question. If you were starting over, knowing what you know now, what advice would you have for yourself?
Oh man, fundraise.
That is awesome. I have not heard that one yet.
The hardest thing about coaching at a public school is access and funding. The first couple of years I was there, the girls' uniforms didn't even match. It was like Bad News Bear Monterey High. We'd roll up and practice pennies and, you know, equipment. I mean, there are still sticks in the equipment room from when I played in the 90s. And I'm not going to give a kid that stick anymore because no one plays with wooden sticks anymore. Everyone has carbon and these super crazy field hockey sticks can cost as much as softball and baseball bats. They're pricey.
Yeah.
And goal cages, $4,000 for a pair. These are things that I have had to fundraise for because until recently, our district didn't fund athletics. Fund buses. We have to fundraise for buses. Other schools and even some sports at our high school don't have to worry about buses to games, but I do. I have to think about how do I get 60, 70 girls to Gilroy to play? It's 100% fundraising, having creative ways to get money quick. I wrote a lot of grants in the beginning to USA Field Hockey, and they were able to give us equipment for like freshman level players. Mm-hmm. But fundraising, man, it's public school coach. That needs to be your game.
I love that answer. And this is, of all of the episodes I've recorded, it's the first time I've heard that. And I flash back to my time coaching and sitting in a fireworks booth and trying everything you could figure out to make a buck. Such a good answer. Something that often people don't realize when they're getting into coaching, they think it's just about the X's and O's and what you're going to do on the court. And that's 10% of the time you're going to spend being a head coach. So thank you for opening the world's eyes to that. This has been fun, Coach. Thanks for coming on. Appreciate having you. And when we get to the other side here, I hope to see you guys up here playing hockey again with our athletes.
Of course. Thank you so much.
This podcast was also brought to you by teachhoops.com. As coaches, our inboxes get flooded with noise on how to make your program better. Teachhoops.com will get you focused on what needs to get done. One thing you've heard from these podcasts is no matter the experience, you got to keep pushing yourself to be better. Coach Steve Collins will help you direct that noise. He is there to help you. He has the credentials as a coach, and he's never turned down a Teach Hoops member. Sign up for a plan at teachhoops.com and mention us at checkout. This site is here simply to help you be better. Take advantage and see you on the court. Remember, go to teachhoops.com.
This episode is brought to you by Element, spelled L-M-N-T. What is Element? It is a delicious, sugar-free electrolyte drink mix. I've been using Element Recharge for the last few months after hearing about it on another podcast, and since then, I've stocked up on boxes and boxes. I usually use it 1 to 2 times per day. Element is a great alternative to other commercial recovery and performance drinks and has enough sodium, potassium, and magnesium to get you feeling and performing your very best. Plus, it has zero sugar, artificial ingredients, or other junk you simply do not want. Speaking of performance, the best performers in the world use Element. I'm talking about Team USA Weightlifting, NBA teams, NFL teams, and Navy SEALs. The list goes on. Element can expand your limits too. Want more energy while low-carb dieting or intermittent fasting? Want to crush that next workout? Or want to just be ready for the next workday? Element has the electrolytes to make this happen. And with 8 delicious flavors, you're guaranteed to find one that will satisfy your taste buds. They just released their latest flavor, grapefruit, and it has quickly become one of my favorites. Element came up with a fantastic offer for us. Just go to drinkelement.com/JustinClimo to claim your 8-count free sample pack.
Thanks for listening. If you found this valuable, please be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the show, and give contacts and this week's guest a shout out on social media to show your support.